I think it's probably under like
master and
building
off bill.
Mass?
Yeah.
Yeah. Off
yeah. Oh, I see. So it's
sector. So when you look in the analytical light there, well, that's the thing. You look in Westcott and Forest.
Good. Good.
And then all the, like, UBS and Nestle's and the old team here.
Mm-hmm. Funny because, like, you know, a lot of your irregular birds in the air is that they didn't do light in it.
Yeah.
Okay, that?
And, yeah.
It was March absence, obviously.
Okay.
No, it's here.
Okay,
we're here.
Sorry, here, Michael, I'll get out of your way here and
here's some notes.
But okay, well, that's fine. See, what I'm going to have to do, is it possible, Brother Ed, to write a note and put it in my box? I know that you're here. But see, I've got to have my helper cross this out with White Owl. Because what they do, if I just, you know, cross it out like this, they think that you did it. And then they'll change it. They'll still mark it like you're asking. So all I need is just a sheet of paper or just some scratch paper or something here saying that you were here on 1/23 week of healer orientation, that you talked with me, and my helper can wipe this up and let your helper
communicate. Oh, okay.
That's about the only way I can correct it.
Okay.
That's the super advanced class.
Yeah. You give them all Greek and Hebrew in 1 hour, and they get a super advanced class there.
Yeah.
For us, it takes
really,
2 years going through.
Slowly, agonizing.
Was that the problem?
That's not well, take heart, my brother. Don't test him.
God bless you, brother. Yeah, right.
For me, you have to do it.
My. Well, lesson 55, section 197. I want to make some continuations on these clause discussion here, and then we'll, if we have time, get started with lesson 55. I don't know how long it's going to take here. So, page 279, we just read this paragraph here that you can take for what it's worth. And then, coming down to part A here, the little bold-faced letter A, further remarks on these narrative sequences, and this we want to pay close attention to. So further remarks on the present future narrative sequences 1B to C. Now that 1B to C, you might wonder what's that relating to. Well, that actually goes back to page 163. So you may want to take a quick look at page 163 to remind you of this. His references are kind of vague sometimes. It's hard to remember back there, but section 132 there on page 163, we had the type 1 and 2 up there, narrative sequences. So 1, B, and C are the punctual future and punctual habitual. That's imperfect plus continuation with wu plus the perfects. And then 1C is the nonverbal clause plus wu plus the perfects. So what we're talking about is clauses that continue with converted perfects, whether they begin with an imperfect or begin with a nonverbal clause. And the imperfect ones can either be punctual future, meaning punctual meaning finite future, as it were, meaning you're talking about specific future events, or punctual habitual, talking about specific, actual verbal action, but it is habitual. You know, he's doing this continually, that type of thing. Okay, so that's what he's referring back to when he says the present future narrative sequence. This sequence, characterized by a continuing series of converted perfects, and that's true whether it starts off with a nonverbal clause or a nonverbal or an imperfect, may be led off by a variety of clause types. We have already mentioned leading clauses with verbal imperfect and nonverbal predicates. That was part B and C there. The verb haya in a leading clause requires special consideration. By virtue of its double meaning, be or become, it may be used to describe a non-punctual past situation. Non-punctual means non-finite verb. In other words, it's not an actual verb form per se, but it's more talking about the state of being, that type of thing. More of a stative idea or a non-active idea. It's not a real action that's taking place. So non-punctual past tense situation. It's past time, but it's not really talking about specific action. So, for example, there was a famine in the land. It's kind of describing a circumstantial situation. Okay, if a narrative sequence begins with a clause containing the verb haya or wayhi, the real nature of the sequence is not clear until we reach a continuing verb. In other words, you have to kind of see whether they're going to pick up the series with converted perfects or with converted imperfects. See, if you can continue with converted imperfects, then if you start off with a perfect form of haya and continue with a converted imperfect, then you're just following your normal sequential narrative. You start off with a past tense verb, and you're continuing with converted forms of the imperfect, which give you past tense narrative. So it's just kind of a narrative sequence, like we've already seen. But suppose you start off with haya and then continue it with perfects rather than imperfects. Then you're seeing this habitual sense that he's mentioning here. And so we see the two examples here. Haya ra'av ba'aretz, wa yarad mitzrayma. There was a famine in the land, and he used to go down to Egypt. Now he's translating he used to go down to Egypt because it's wa yarad. It's the perfect form of the verb to descend. And so we started off with haya, and we're continuing with perfects. Now, if you wanted to make a narrative sequence out of this, the next example is just the same except for the verb form for the second verb. It's haya ra'av ba'aretz, wayered mitzrayma. And wayered is the imperfect form. Now, that imperfect form is indicating your normal converted imperfect that's continuing a narrative sequence. And so the translation of that is, there was a famine in the land and he went down to Egypt. That's specific and punctual. In other words, the difference is there was a famine in the land and he used to go down to Egypt versus there was a famine in the land and he went down to Egypt. In one case, you're telling a specific narrative story about what happened. In another case, you're telling more of a habitual thing that he used to do. So it's a subtle difference, but it's one that you should take note of here. Because he's going to give some interesting examples here of the way the sequences flow. And what's that?
Normally, if we just follow our English thinking, we would translate the first one as the second.
Right, exactly. The first one would normally, if you just consider the perfect value of both of those, you would just translate and he went down to Egypt. But it's important to see this because, you see, what we need to recognize is the normal mode of narrative in Hebrew is to go to converted imperfects when you're continuing the narrative sequence. That's the normal mode. When they don't do that, it's for a reason. And the reason is here, you're setting up a habitual structure rather than the other. And we'll see this when it follows. It's a little bit easier to see in actual practice because in practice, you probably have something like this in a narrative sequence where you've been setting up a sequence and you've been seeing these imperfect verb forms over and over again, converted imperfects. And then you suddenly have a parenthesis oftentimes. There was a famine in Egypt and he used to go down. It's kind of giving you some parenthetical information that's going to be relevant to resuming back into the narrative. And so you'll see this breakup and you'll see a perfect used with perfects then instead of with the imperfect. And that will automatically change the mode, and you'll sense it. You'll sense it as you're reading. And it's subtle if you're just looking at simple examples like this. But as you're looking at it within the sequence and within the narrative, you know, it's usually pretty easy to identify. That's one of the reasons why in the last part of this chapter he'll give you some illustrated passages where you can kind of see how this thing works. And it'll, in order to give parenthetical information or something, set up a different kind of sequence. Okay. Now let's go on here, and the more we look at this, I think the easier it'll be to see. The leading clause of the present-future sequence may thus be redefined as comprising the formal subtypes. So now we've got some more things to add to what we had before. A sequence now that's continuing with converted perfect forms, in other words, a present-future sequence, could be led off by an imperfect, so you can start off with an imperfect verb form and then continue with converted perfect, or a nonverbal clause, including those with participial predicates. Many times a nonverbal clause, a participle and so forth, would be analogous to an imperfect verb form. It's kind of a present idea, you know, rather than the past tense. And so that, we've already seen before, that can be picked up with converted perfects and continue this sense of future or present or habitual or something. Thirdly, you have the conditional clauses with perfect or imperfect finite verb in a present-future meaning. Okay? In the conditional clauses, they can start off with either a perfect or an imperfect finite verb. With the perfects, we saw you had kind of a sense of projecting yourself into a position of where it had already happened. Or the imperfect, of course, you're just making a few statement of the future, usually. And then you continue those with a converted perfect. And so you have to watch out for this, because conditionals, you could conceivably have a situation where if you had, say, an M or something, usually you'd see it with an M that'll tell you that, but you could have, if there was a famine in the land of Egypt, he would go down or something like that. You could continue that with the converted perfects that way, too. So you, apart from there being an M or a hen or some kind of a key word there, you might have a hard time telling just structurally between the case where you're having a habitual perfect sequence and a prosodic type of conditional situation. So you just want to pay a little bit of attention to that. Most of the time in those cases, I think that there'll be some word there that'll make the difference, an M or something of that nature. Okay, and then the last category here, D, is a verb hayah, a non-punctual sense, all continued by wa plus converted perfect. So the verb hayah in the non-punctual sense is being continued this way. If it's a punctual sense, meaning, you know, you're talking about actual events in a narrative, then you're going to continue with converted imperfects rather than converted perfects. So that category D is what we just looked at here. And then part B here, and some of this is new, we have conjunctive non-converting sequences where we're not converting the value or the sense of the verbs. And so we can have the first kind here, perfect plus wa plus perfect, unconverted. In other words, now it's it's just a string of perfects here, and there's not a converting sense taking place. Secondly, imperfect plus wa plus imperfect, unconverted. And you can usually tell those more easily because the wa does not have its converted form. Remember, when you have it converted in the imperfect, you have the wa form. You have a slightly different form of the conjunction. When you see imperfects in a series that don't have wa before them but have wa, you know that you're dealing with something different. We'll see just how those are used in a moment. And but the perfect plus wa plus perfect, those are going to be ambiguous again, because this kind of a sequence could potentially be confused with some things above. Now, the information above, though, only really fits with hayah. Hayah is the only thing that really does that. So I suppose if you keep that in mind, it won't be a problem there. It could potentially be a problem with the conditionals, except that there usually you have some other piece of information also. So again, you're looking at context and so forth to determine this. We'll see how those sequences are used. And then thirdly, imperative plus wa plus imperative. We've already seen those. We've seen a series of imperatives where you're just connected with wa and you have a number of commands, not necessarily in an order. And so the third of these sequences has already been mentioned. Section 107 is included here only because of the formal similarity. Sequences 1 and 2, under Part B above now, sequences 1 and 2, however, are new, and because they are by no means uncommon, deserve some comment. They seldom occur in punctual narrative and are used mainly where there is a simple listing of clauses without an explicit expression of logical or temporal consecution. They may be thus defined as conjunctive but non-consecutive. Okay, so when you're trying to say some things that are, you're not necessarily telling a story of this event happened and then this and then this and then this and then this. If you just want to list a number of things that happened or a number of actions that were performed or something, and you're not trying to set any order to them, you'll see these non-consecutive conjunctive clauses. They're non-consecutive. There's no conversion to the forms. And so you're just listing a number of verbal actions that took place. Not necessarily in any order. Especially if you want to say one person, he did this, and he did this, and he did this, and he did this, and he did this. Number of different verbal actions, and you're not interested in what order he did them. You're just saying that he did those. You may set it up in a series like that. And it will not be a conjunctive. I mean, it'll be conjunctive, but it will not be consecutive. Now, but when they are used in a consecutive series, see, that use would be pretty straightforward. But unfortunately, they also happen to be used in a consecutive series. As well, yes, in a strange way.
Used above,
that maybe used more in the spoken language,
some dialogue, or some historical narration, or things that somebody would say, well,
mm-hmm.
this happened.
Well, you'll usually see it in situations where you're not, let's put it this way, it's not dealing with a historical sequence or historical narrative. You may see it, though, you may see it in conversational things, but I think what you're going to see it more often is in poetic books and things where you're not really trying to tell a story, but you're, you know, maybe didactic sections where you're doing some teaching, where there's, you know, instructions about doing this and this and this. Usually you're going to have imperatives there, but or if you're just relating principles or something like that. Of course, most of the Old Testament is going to be narrative sequence. The majority of it will be. Even in some of the prophetic sections, you see that. But when the prophets, for example, are preaching to the people and that type of thing, you may see some more of these non-consecutive type of expressions there. And you probably won't find very many that go for very any length of time. In other words, you're not going to see a lot of strings of things together, but maybe two or three on occasion. And that's what he's talking about here. Okay. Now, there's another thing, though, that the thing he's about to talk about, where you're probably going to see this even more often, is when you do have a sort of consecutive series, but it's sandwiched into another narrative sequence, and there's a purposeful break where you're maybe making a parenthesis about something, and you're wanting to get this information in before you continue your narrative sequence. And so you'll stop and take a pause and kind of go off into these other forms where you're not converting your forms anymore. But you still have a sort of a series there, but it's purposely done to break it off from the rest of the series. In other words, it's doing what punctuation often does in English. They're going to convert these verb forms to effectively set a certain thing apart and let you know that it's not part of the main sequence, but it's information on the side. So let's look at this. But when they are used in a consecutive series, it is usually continue a disjunctive clause rather than in the main narrative. So you may have a disjunction that breaks up your main narrative, and if you want to continue that disjunctive clause, continue some information about that disjunctive section, you'll do it this way. Then you can revert back to the main narrative by moving back to the other forms. For example, suppose that in the main narrative, a person has been mentioned about whom the writer wishes to supply additional information. So they're coming along and they say so-and-so comes along and then they want to say, now this is the one who did such and such and did such, and give you some information about who this person is and kind of give you some background on him. Well, in order to do that, such information is usually introduced by a disjunctive formula, meaning the verb not first. We've already talked about disjunctive clauses, just putting something other than the verb first. That will set you off from the main narrative immediately. But then it is often the case that this explanatory disjunction will continue for several clauses before the writer returns to the main narrative. It is in this type of subsequence that one and two are frequently met in a consecutive sense. So you may, it's one thing to have a disjunctive formula and then just come back to the main narrative sequence. We already looked at that before in another chapter. But suppose you wanted to continue this disjunctive series. Suppose you wanted to start saying all kinds of things now about this one, and you wanted to make sure that the person who is reading it understood that this information you're continuing is separate from the main narrative. Then you'll use this non-converted type of construction, and it'll still get a consecutive sense because of the way that you're setting it up disjunctive from the main narrative. So let's look at the example. For example, 1 Samuel 23:20, concerning a certain Ben-Ehu, I guess. You've got Wahu Yaraz Wehika Es Ha'ari, and he is the one who went down and killed the lion. Okay, Wahu, that is going to set you off. You're assuming you're dealing with a narrative sequence in which you have converted imperfects that are getting perfect meaning flowing along here. Now your clause starts, Wahu, that's going to be automatically disjunctive because it's a non-verb. Okay, so you've broken off from the main narrative, and now you go back to a normal perfect form, Yarad, and he is the one who went down. You've been using converted imperfects. Now you've got a disjunction. You go back to the converted perfect. But instead of instead of continuing it with a converted imperfect, which you normally would do in starting a sequence like that, in other words, you could think of this as starting a new sequence, in order to let you know that we're not going back to the main sequence, to the main story, they keep it in the perfect. So, wahikka, and that's a perfect hifil form for another one to kill, so many verbs to kill. And there's a PL, it might be PL, I'm not sure on that. Do you remember? Anybody remember right offhand? for the Sheffield appeal? Huh? Yeah, I remember we did, and I can't remember if it's if that first hay is it's a. It could be a Sheffield, it could be a appeal. Kind of depends on what the root is. I thought it was Sheffield, but you might. It's perfect regardless.
It's a one nun.
It's a one nun. Okay, then it's a Sheffield from a one nun. It's a one nun, three hay Sheffield. Okay. Anyway, it's a perfect form. And so, and we've got a, we just got the normal conjunction were there, and there's no, nothing strange about it. So, and presumably, if this were to continue, if it says we went down and killed the lion and cut open his carcass and did this and did that and did that, whatever, there's a number of verbs continuing, they would all be perfects, not converted imperfects. And then if you wanted to go back to the main narrative, you'd switch back to your converted imperfects now. And that would tell you you're coming back to the main sequence again. So that's an interesting mechanism that they're using with these sequences to get parenthetical information. And this is consecutive. You know, he went down and he killed and so forth. But it's not your normal consecutive series. It's kind of a series within a series or something that's kind of broken down and set aside from the series to get some parenthetical information. Yes? Oh, okay. That's an error. Okay, we'll check. Make a. But the. Oh, okay.
Benaiah.
Okay. And says another use of sequences one and two above. So that's one use. Is just now this can happen both with perfects and imperfects. In other words, if you're talking about the future and you're using converted perfects. And so you're coming along with these converted perfects, and you wanted to give some parenthetical information in a future narrative, then you could break off from that by just, instead of using converted perfects, use a disjunctive construction, put something beside the verb first, then go ahead and use an imperfect form, and then continue with the imperfect forms, staying, and then go back to the converted perfect forms again to come back to your main sequence. Okay. That's quite an interesting situation. Another use of sequences 1 and 2 above is an analog of the imperative plus wo plus cohortative sequence, in which the second clause is best translated as a purpose or result clause. That goes back to section 107 again. And just to remind you of what we have, if you start off with an imperative, do this so that this will happen. So that you might do this, or so, and it could be adjustive or a cohortative or a, or even an imperfect, you know, following it. But you get this kind of a result. Imperative plus one of these other imperfect types is going to give you the result of the action, and so forth. Now, it says, thus, of course, there's an analogy to that, he's saying, by using these one and two type sequences here. Just strings of perfects or strings of imperfects with what? So thus, corresponding to a hypothetical but normal sequence of the type 1b, har hev lanu wanif re ba'aretz, make room for us so that we may be fruitful in the land. What you have here, you're starting off with a Sheffield imperative here, har he, which is a Sheffield imperative form, and then you're continuing with a converted, you're continuing with just a perfect form. This is a call, three hey verb, and Nifret. So you've got an imperative. Excuse me. This is an imperfect form, but you start off with an imperative and then an imperfect form. And the imperfect form here is this first person common plural cohortative form, actually. So you're continuing with that cohortative. It could be an imperfect. You know, kind of depends on how you analyze this one with a three hey verb. It's hard to tell. But you're continuing with a non-converted form of that. See, let's go back in section 107. Does somebody have the page for that? Just wanted to remind you of what that looked like. I think they gave the whole... Okay, page 119, yeah. Yeah, we start off with... it's C here, imperative, adjustive, or cohortative, plus imperfect or cohortative. And... says note that the conjunction wo has its normal non-converting form here. That's one of the key features, so you know that it's not some other type of sequence. It wouldn't be too much of a problem with an imperative, but with adjustive or coordinative, where the form, if you started off with one of those, you might have a hard time telling. So it does have the non-converted form here. So make room for us so that we may be fruitful in the land. So it's a command. The first one's a command, and the next one's a coordinative, so that we may be fruitful in the land. All right, now he's saying that there's an analog to that if you're wanting to just make a statement of a result. Such and such happened with the result that. And so we have ki ata hirhiv, excuse me, Yahweh lanu barinu ba'aretz. For now the Lord has made room for us to be fruitful in the land. What you have here is just a perfect form. You're starting off with a perfect form and just continuing with a perfect form, and it's non-converted. And so they're saying that this is analogous to this other type of situation where you're just making a statement and then giving the result. Now, context is going to have to be your guide here too, because the actual forms wouldn't be any different than some of the other situations we've seen up before where you broke off from the main narrative or something like that. But if you're not breaking off from a main narrative, and if it's a simple statement of fact and so forth, context will, this is one of the ways that this is handled. So for now, the Lord has made room for us to be fruitful in the land. But lanu too, you know, it kind of helps. It helps you see the for us. And the Lord has made room for us, and we were fruitful in the land, or something like that. You could almost translate it literally and still get the sense. In English, we can say the Lord made room for us and we were fruitful in the land. And because of the semantics of the situation, we can draw the same conclusion that the Lord made room for us in order that we might be able to be fruitful in the land. That was the intent for it. Okay. But you're going to have to deal with context on a lot of these to tell that this is any different than something else. Yes. No, see, that's the point that he's making, is that you're starting off with a perfect and then you continue with a perfect. And that's an example of this type one of your perfect plus what plus perfect, unconverted. And he's saying that it's sequential, though, in a certain sense, because the Lord has made room for us to be fruitful in the land. In other words, he's done something in order so that something else might happen. But it's not so much relating a narrative sequence. It's not a narrative sequence of telling a story. It's trying to show a cause and effect kind of situation. And so you're going to have to be careful to pick up on it. In other words, anytime you see perfects continuing with perfects in a series, stop and take a look at it and try to ascertain why. Your normal pattern is going to be, if you're telling a story, perfect, starting off with a perfect and then continuing with converted imperfects. But if you're seeing perfects lined together just with wood joining them, or imperfects lined together with just wood joining them, you know you're dealing with one of these categories here, and context will have to decide which one of the categories fits the best. That's why we're going to look at some examples here to try to follow the thing through to see how this fits together. Okay, and then another point he makes. Finally, note the unusual sequence occurring in each of the three passages outlined below as illustrations. We are dealing in each case with a punctual habitual sequence. Circumstantial information about action which is prior to the clause that will follow is introduced by wa plus imperfect, converted, best rendered, and when he had done so-and-so. Okay, such clauses are conjunctive by definition, but because of their formal departure from the sequence in which they occur, they clearly mark anticipatory temporal subordination. Okay, anticipatory temporal subordination is quite a mouthful there. All right, but what he's saying is they're giving some information. It's anticipatory, meaning it's in prior time, and temporal, meaning relating to time, and subordination, meaning it's secondary information. It's not the primary information. So it means it's information that's parenthetical information that's telling you something about what happened before to help you understand what's going on now. And so what they're saying is that if you're going along in a punctual sequence, punctual habitual sequence, and dealing with things that were going on, circumstantial information about action which is prior to the clause that will follow is introduced by wa. In other words, you want circumstantial information that is prior to the thing that happens that's going to follow, but it's about action which is prior. Excuse me. You're wanting to say some information about things that had happened before. It's introduced by wa plus imperfect. It's converted, so you can tell right away that this is, since it's converted, it's got this converted form, you know that you're talking about past tense. So you may be following along in a present tense situation, and now you convert to Wayoma or something like that, some imperfect form converted. You're kind of breaking what you've been talking about, and you're kind of going back now to talk about something in the past. And so it's best... being from the course of things again, but it's in a certain direction, and this will happen in these kind of habitual sequences. Those are usually ones where you start off maybe with a participle or something like this, or a verb haya, talk about a certain state of being. That's what this first passage will do. Okay, let's look at the passages. I think this may be the best thing, and then we'll revert back. He's got some notes besides each passage telling you which part of the thing that he discussed in this lesson is being used. Yes?
Would you mind giving us a bit nice definition for meaning of the three last
words? Okay. All right. Anticipatory temporal subordination. Anticipatory means it's before, it's going back into the past, as it were, to tell you some things that are anticipating something to come. In other words, the sense is you've got some information that's going to come. He's trying to take you someplace, but he wants to give you something that's ahead of time. There's some information that you're going to need to understand this. So to anticipate something to follow, he's going to give you some information. And then temporal, of course, dealing with historical or time-related things, some information that's occurred in time. And subordination means it's in a lower position. It's subordinate to the main clause. In other words, you could cut it out and still understand what's going on, or at least still be able to make some sense out of the grammar. But in order to fully understand the meaning of what's going on, this information is needed. So subordinate information, like subordinate clauses, you can cut the subordinate clause out and you can still have a sentence. So this is subordinate information. This isn't the main sequence, it's off to the side. It's parenthetical information, you might say. It's something that's in a parenthesis. So subordination. In other words, you're subordinating the information. When you set up this kind of a clause construction, you're subordinating the information that you're giving. You're putting it on a lower shelf and saying, by the way, here's some information that will help you understand this. But this is side information. This isn't the main sequence. And it's anticipatory in the sense that it's usually information that had happened before that will help you understand what's about to happen. So in anticipating what's going to happen, he's trying to give you some information here. In other words, you're talking, and this happens in testimony sometimes. People are they're testifying about certain things, and they say, oh, excuse me, I need to back up a bit and tell you about this, because you won't understand what I'm about to say if I don't tell you this over here. And in narrative, it's kind of that way. It's maybe not quite so blatant, and it may be intentional just for effect to do this. But you're coming up to a certain point about to explain something, and you realize that the person you're about to explain this to is not going to fully get the impact of it unless you give some side information, meanwhile back at the ranch information, telling them what has happened to make this a future event that you're about to describe more understandable. So anticipatory temporal subordination. You're dealing with time, you're trying to anticipate something that's coming, and you're subordinating some information, giving some... So in my mind, I would probably just call it parenthetical information that is going to help you understand something to come. And it's almost always going to be something that's already happened. Otherwise, it really isn't information. Okay? Any other questions or comments on that? Like I said, this isn't the easiest chapter in the book because you're dealing with these sequences, and you do have to rely so much upon context and things. What it's trying to do, though, is give you the range of kinds of things that can happen so that once we get into things, we'll begin to see when you're breaking off the series and doing some other things. So, illustrated passages, 1 Samuel 17, 34 and 35. In this passage, David describes his prowess as a shepherd. The sequence begins with the ambiguous verb haya, and is uniformly with converted perfects, 1b, with the exception of wayakam, which belongs to the peculiar type mentioned in the preceding paragraph. In this and the following passages, only the leading elements of each clause are given. Clauses irrelevant to the discussion at hand are omitted. Indentation indicates subordination or disjunction. The reader should compare our outlines with the original text. So you could take a look at the text if you want here. I guess I didn't bring one with me today. But, yeah, why don't you hand out some. Oh, we got them greens there. Good. Okay. We'll need 1 Samuel. Yeah, 1 Samuel and Job. Probably, and we can probably follow well enough just with this, but... Oops. Yeah, 1 Samuel 17. Traded in on the new model there. A lot of money is worth of books in that back shelf. I don't know what they're selling greens for now, but. Is it? Is that right? I don't remember what I got mine for. I got it a long time ago. I don't think I paid that much for it. Okay. Yeah. So the basic thing is, remember he said you start off with Hayah. When you start off with Hayah, you're not quite certain whether you're dealing with a normal historical narrative sequence, in which case you would continue with converted perfects, converted imperfects, or whether you're dealing with a habitual clause where you might continue with perfects, and then you're talking about, you know, the way things used to happen rather than talking about an actual situation. So look at the example here. Ro'e Hayah Avdaka. I, your servant, was a shepherd. Okay, you're starting off with Hayah, and I was a shepherd is ambiguous as it stands, because it's not so much that phrase itself is ambiguous, but it's the kind of sequence that's being started is ambiguous as yet until you see what the next verb is going to be. So there's no problem in translating that, even if you don't see I was a shepherd is clear to the sense, regardless. However, now he says Uva, and Uva Ha'are is beginning the next clause there. I don't know what's in between there. But, and whenever a lion would come. Now, why is he translating and whenever a lion would come rather than and a lion came? Well, if it was a lion came, then you'd have the converted imperfect there. And you have uva. You have a perfect form. And so that is telling you that this is not a narrative sequence. And and being not a narrative sequence in this kind of a context, it's going to have to be this habitual sense. And so, and whenever a lion would come, and we would translate it kind of in a modal sense, like whenever a lion would come, it's kind of a hypothetical situation, and he's talking about not one event that happened at one time, but whenever the lion came. And whenever a lion would come, and now this parenthetical, well, this kind of a structure is continued here. And whenever a lion would come, and then the next verb is when nasa and take, then yatsithi, I would go out, and wahikati, wahikithi, and strike him, and and rescue. So the idea is whenever the lion would come, and take. Now, what's the whole? I don't have a copy of this in front. What's the rest of the words in between? Is it and take the sheep and that type of thing? And I would go out and strike him and rescue him. He would strike the lion or something and rescue the sheep or something. Okay, that's the sense of it anyway. So he's saying whenever the lion would do this and take, and when he would do this, then I would do this and so forth. And all of these verbs are in non-converted perfect forms. Now we break off from that, and we have Wayakam, and when he attacked me, this he calls anticipatory subordination. And when he attacked me, I would grab him and beat him and kill him. So, and then you're continuing with perfect verb forms here. So the point here is he's kind of backing up a little bit because he first starts saying whenever the lion would come and take the sheep and so forth, I would go out and strike and rescue and so forth. And that would happen if the lion didn't attack him. But, and when he attacked me, now that's a different situation. Now he's kind of going back here for another alternative. Now what did I do in the case that he attacked me? Well, when he attacked me, I'd grab him, beat him, and kill him. So in one case, he would rescue the lamb from the lion and beat him off. But if the lion attacked him, he would kill the lion. So that's why you see kind of an anticipatory subordination here. You're subordinating this information and saying, you know, in case you're wondering what happened when he attacked me, this is what I did. So then you come back and resume the main sequence. After, when he attacked me, I would grab him and beat him and kill him. And when he attacked me, it's kind of taking it back, but then he picks up the mode that he'd already started, said I would grab him and beat him and kill him if he did that. Okay, so here's some examples of the way these things are broken up. And the fact that this converted imperfect form falls in the middle of all of these non-converted perfect forms is showing you that it's changed something there for you. But then you're going to pick up again what happened in that alternative. So it's kind of a branching type of function here. Your servant David was a shepherd. That's what it starts off with. Then he's telling you whenever a lion would come, and then it kind of branches. One branches, if he came and took the sheep and so forth, I would go out and I would strike and rescue the sheep. But then another branch is when he attacked me, I would beat him and kill him, grab him, beat him and kill him. So there's kind of two things that might happen, two alternatives that might happen when this happens. It's rather complicated sentence structure, even in English. Yes?
I was wondering about converted perfect. What type would that be?
Oh, what type would this series be? This would be the first... Let me see here. It would be, starting with Hayah, it'd be 1D, I guess... Part A, sub D, top of page 280. You have part D there, the verb haya in a non-functional sense, all continued by will plus converted perfect.
But the continual sense was translated over here. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I would do this, and I would do this, and I would do this. So it's...
Converted?
Yes, I guess they are considering these converted. That's right. Because, see, the trouble with the perfects is you can't tell by the forms whether they're converted or not. Because the form's the same for converted versus unconverted ones. The imperfects you can tell. So these are converted forms, actually, because it's saying, I would do this. And it's kind of a, you know, middle ground area, because when you would do this, of course, it was something that was in the past tense, but it was progressive in the past, and it was habitual. And so that's what you normally would see an imperfect form. And so I guess we're considering these converted. I think it's easy to be misled by, number one, the fact that the converted forms and the unconverted forms don't have any difference in form for the perfects. Number two, that you're dealing with past tense things here, so it's very easy to think of this in the past. But I suppose it's best to consider this converted and giving a habitual sense. I would do this, and I would do this, and I would do this. Yes?
Earlier on in the book, he said that the perfect rarely in prose, but frequently in other circumstances, you know, it's habitual activity.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now he just said over here that this is a common...
Yeah, I think it's kind of... I don't think it's really a contradiction in the sense that it kind of depends on what range of class of things you're talking about. In other words, if you're talking about narrative sequences, and you know, he's saying this is common over here because he's talking about the use of narrative sequences and clauses. And he's saying it's not common in the other passage because he's talking about the totality of Scripture. In other words, you're not going to see this happen very often in Scripture total. But when you're considering the way in which clauses are used, this is one of the common ways in which clauses are used, you might say. See what I'm saying? In other words, it kind of depends on what the class of objects you're talking about is before whether you call something common or not. And, of course, those terms are pretty general terms anyway. I don't think we read... He may not have even thought about what he was doing here, you know, and remembered that he said this was rare before. So it's a common use of clause relationship. You're talking about the way, there's a lot, in other words, there are a lot rarer uses of clauses than this one. And the major one, of course, is that obvious major narrative sequence. That kind of dominates everything. So compared to the normal narrative sequences, this is relatively rare. But in comparison to this chapter, Lesson 55, which is dealing with all the unusual uses of clauses, this is one of the more common of those.
I still don't see what would stop me from translating the whole thing in passing.
Okay. If you did, it's context. It's context that's your main guide here. So one of the things that may tip you off is this reversion to this wayakam there. You're going to run across that. You're going to wonder, why is that all of a sudden thrown in the middle of it? In other words, I'm going along here, doing just fine, translating in past tense. Now I see that thing. And am I going to jump to a future now, or what is it, what's going to take place? It just doesn't fit any other way. And in a sense, they're still being translated in a past idea, all of them, but it's a habitual sense rather than an actual narrative. In other words, your context is telling you, in effect, that this is, he's talking about whatever happened when any time a lion came, not a certain lion came on a certain day, and the lion came, and I took him, and I went out, and I struck him, and I rescued the sheep. But then, it says, and when he attacked me. Now, that wouldn't make any sense if he'd already rescued the sheep and so forth, and smote the lion, and away he went, unless he came back and attacked him after that had happened. But you still got this breakup here and going to a converted imperfect. And in other words, you don't need to go to a converted imperfect if you're just going to stay in the past tense all the way through and just follow a sequence.
It's strange that the Greens put it all in past tense.
Oh, yeah, he may have. He may have just translated it literally. And Young's might very well have done that, too, because Young's tends to ignore the conversion factor. Mm-hmm. He just translates it literally. And so you get kind of a... awkward translation that way. Although if you understand the Hebrew, what's going on in the Hebrew, you can still follow it all right. But this is the point of these narrative sequences. You've got to see what's happening in the sequence and the disjunction and the separation that's going on between the main narratives. And another factor, of course, I think the most obvious factor is that if we were going to make this a past tense narrative, we would be using the converted imperfects all the way through. That's what's universally done. I mean, if you want to continue a narrative in the past tense, you'll just do that. So the fact that this isn't doing what's normally done immediately grabs the attention. If you're following along a narrative sequence like that, see now, and this is what I think Eric brought up before. What's happening here is David is telling some things. He's talking to somebody else about the way things happen. So the whole narrative, as far as the historical narrative, is the events in the life of David. And here we find David making statements himself. And so that itself is kind of taking you away from the flow of the history. It's David now talking and telling us something from his perspective, and now we get a different sense to it. And so the habitual, I think, is the only way to really fit this. Now, some of these you may not be able to tell until you read on. Like you said, the hayah there is ambiguous when it starts off. You don't know which way you're going. So you may say, I, your servant David, was a shepherd, and then a lion came and did all of this. He could be recounting only one instance that happened in his past, and he's telling you specifically what took place. But to put it in this mode, continuing with a converted perfect, is setting up a different sense. It's setting up a habitual type of sense to it. Now, it's easier, if this was done in the imperfect, it'd be a lot easier to tell, because now you'd be able to tell that you were dealing with converted forms, because the form is different. With the perfect forms, the converted forms are a little bit ambiguous, so that's going to add some more to the difficulty. Yes, go ahead.
The wayakam, now,
mm-hmm.
That's a converted perfect.
Right.
Why doesn't it have the comments in the law?
Oh, normally the wow just has a pasach. Normally, that comments that you saw over there was just an unusual thing. Remember, that was because of that either pause or something like that. Your normal form, and now it depends on whether it's a guttural or not too.
Why is it the guttural?
The gutturals will take the comments because of they can't take the dagesh.
So, in the other case, you're just kind of contexting,
that is not. Right. Yeah, you could potentially have a problem there. Yeah. Hopefully, that won't happen too often where you'd have a problem in that one. But you have the, and the stress marks aren't there either, so you might be able to tell from the stress shift. But usually your normal form for the while converted form for an imperfect is wa plus the fatha plus a doubling. If you can't do the doubling, then you'll sometimes have compensatory lengthening. Yes?
Did you say this was not imperfect?
Which one? Wayakam?
Yeah.
That's an imperfect converted.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I thought you said perfect. I thought it was perfect.
No, did I? I hope I said imperfect.
Oh, okay.
That's what was in my brain, and I don't know what came out my mouth. Yeah. Kum. Yeah. Wayakam, you see, you let go. This from the imperfect, third person imperfect. So that's an imperfect form. Okay. That, if I didn't make that clear, that would have made it hard for you to see where the change was. Okay. Well, whatever. That form is out of sorts with the rest of them in the series. See, the rest of them are converted perfects. This one's a converted imperfect. And that just jumps out the page, you know.
Wait, they're converted?
Those are considered converted, too. Yeah, this question came up earlier. When I first said it, I thought they were not converted also, but they are converted. It's a little bit hard to tell because, see, on a perfect form, you can't tell from the form of the wood whether it's converted or not.
Yeah.
It's only going to be contextual considerations that are going to tell you that. And because he's kind of defining it this way, and this may be just part of the way it's being defined, you know, he's defining them as converted. I suppose another person could define them as unconverted and still, you know, just call the series an unconverted one. But when I first looked at it, I thought, well, it's probably unconverted because you're translating it with a past tense sense. But the trouble is, it's a past tense sense, but it's a habitual sense. It's not punctual, and that's what would justify it. Of course, he calls it converted here. In the beginning, the sequence begins with an ambiguous verb hayah, is uniformly with converted perfects. So they're called converted.
Habitual would be without being converted.
Right. Oh, no, wait, no, wait.
Where it's converted, right?
No, let's see. The habitual is when you have converted perfect, and punctual is converted imperfect. So they're both converted, but one's perfect and one's imperfect. That's the distinction. Now, the unconverted ones are getting you into this B section here. This is the part we haven't really covered yet. We'll see an example of that later. Yes?
All of this context here may also help in deciding it because it talks about, he starts out with, and whenever a lion would come, but it also says, and a bear.
Oh, does it? Okay.
But then when it talks about it, they're all singular verbs.
Uh-huh.
And the verb and the endings, like I took him,
right,
they're all singular.
Sure.
And so it would be confusing otherwise.
Yeah.
Because you, which him are you referring to?
Exactly.
And they take, did the two of them come and take one lamb?
Sure.
It doesn't make sense, and so you have to see that.
Yep.
He's talking about whenever a bear would come, or
mm-hmm,
whenever a lion would come.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to see.
That helps tremendously.
About more than one instance.
Yeah.
Going on here.
Yeah, you got an excellent point there, because otherwise, yeah, if you try to take this as a historical narrative, you've got the verbs aren't lining up, and which is it, the lion or the bear? But this is obviously setting up a hypothetical, I don't want to say hypothetical, but a kind of a habitual situation. If habitually, whenever a lion or would ever come, I would do this. And when it would attack me, then it would do this. I had a different course of action for whether they attacked or whether they just trying to steal sheep. Okay, well, we're out of time already. We'll continue these other examples. This is worth taking the time with, though, because we're going to get starting into translating pretty soon, and we're going to run into this. And the series breaks up. We're going to have to remember, well, what are we dealing with here? Okay, and I think you'll probably have occasion to refer to Lesson 55 in the future in your exegesis.